Jai Om Vishnu Pada Paramahamsa Paravakshaya Stotara Shatta Shri Shimane Si Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Ananta Koti Vaishnavrinda Ki Jai Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakura Ki Jai Prem Shikho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopinath Shyama Kunda Radha Kunda Gita Govardhan Ki Jai Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai Navadvip Dham Ki Jai Ganga Maya Ki Jai Jamuna Maya Ki Jai Tulsi Devi Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Samaveda Bhakti Vinda Ki Jai Shri Shri Radha Vrindavan Chandra Ki Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Nitai Gaura Premanande All glories to the Asamo devotees All glories to the Asamo devotees All glories to the Asamo devotees All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Anybody know what verse? Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 5. Verse 47. Aprame anubhavo yam akutaschir bayo maraha nuname tadvirodena mrityurme bhavatanava. Translation. This is Hiranyakashipu speaking. He's talking to himself. But he's deriving some realization by his relationship with his son, Prahlad, and his heinous attempts to kill his own son, which all proved futile. And when Hiranyakashipu, who had previously conquered and taken control of the whole universe, including the devas, with the exceptions of Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, but found he was completely incapable of in any way controlling his son, thereafter trying to kill his own son with the vast armies of mystic rakshasas armed with the most sophisticated weaponry and every other power within the universe which he controlled, but finding himself completely unable to harm or even instill the slightest sense of fear in his own son. Hiranyakashipu came to the realization that he was contending with a power greater than his own, which he did not like to acknowledge. But here, we can see in his own thoughts, he is awakening to some spiritual realization. Translation: I can see that this boy's strength is unlimited, for he has not feared any of my punishments. He appears immortal. Therefore, because of my enmity toward him, it is I who shall die. Or maybe this will not take place. There's no purport, so we'll go on. Thinking in this way, the king of the Daityas, morose and bereft of bodily luster, remains silent with his face downward. Then Shandanamarka, the two sons of Shukracharya, spoke to him in secret. And then they advised Hiranyakashipu. First they flattered him regarding his own power, and without any assistance, they reminded him he has already conquered the whole universe, so he shouldn't be morose because of his failure to control and conquer Prahlad. So they advised him just bind him with the ropes of Varuna until the return of their spiritual master, Shukracharya. And then they would deal with the situation there. So then Hiranyakashipu followed that instruction of binding Prahlad with the ropes of Varuna. And then he requested Shandanamarka, the sons of Shukracharya, to continue trying to instruct Prahlad in the matters of occupational duty, which should be followed by royal household or families. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Hiranyakashipu wanted Prahlad Maharaj to be trained as a diplomatic king in ruling the kingdom, the country, or the world, but not to be advised about renunciation or the renounced order of life. The word dharma here does not refer to some religious faith. As clearly stated, dharmo yasyapa deshtavyo rajnamyo grihamedinam. There are two kinds of royal families, one whose members are simply attached to household life, and the other consisting of rajarshis, kings who govern with ruling power, but are as good as great saints. Prahlad Maharaj wanted to become a rajarshi, whereas Hiranyakashipu wanted him to become a king attached to sense enjoyment, grihamedinam. Therefore, in the Aryan system, there is varnashram dharma, by which everyone should be educated according to this position, to his position in society's division of varna and ashram. The devotee purified by devotional service is always in the transcendental position above the mundane qualities. Thus, the difference between Prahlad Maharaj and Hiranyakashipu was that Hiranyakashipu wanted to keep Prahlad in mundane attachment, whereas Prahlad was above the modes of material nature. As long as one is under the control of material nature, his occupational duty is different from that of a person not under such control. One's real dharma, or occupational duty, is described in Srimad Bhagavatam, dharmam tu saksad bhagavat panitam, as described to his order carriers by Dharmaraj, or Yamaraj. A living being is a spiritual identity, and therefore his occupational duty is also spiritual. The real dharma is that which is advised in Bhagavad Gita, sarva dharma pratyaja mamekam sharanam braja. One must give up one's material occupational duties just as one must give up his material body. Whatever one's occupational duty, even according to the Varnashram system, one must give it up and engage in one's spiritual function. One's real dharma, or occupational duty, is explained by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Jivara Swarupoi Krishnara Nityadas. Every living being is an eternal servant of Krishna. That is one's real occupational duty. Om Ganatana Mandasya Kinanjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Militamina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Shaitanya Manovistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamaya Dadati Swapadantikam He Krishna Karana Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namastate Tapta Kanchana Gaurange Radhe Vrindavanishwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasudhi Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Vanchakopatrubhyasya Kripasannavivacha Patitanam Bhavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Srila Prabhupada is making a comparison between Sanatan Dharma, the eternal occupation of the soul, and the temporary Varnashram system recommended in the scriptures. And of course, Srila Prabhupada wanted both systems. But Daivi Varnashram, the systematic training and arrangement of society according to one's own natural God-given abilities, is very useful for a smooth-running society culminating in the perfection of life, which is to graduate from one's material duties, obligations, and fulfillment of that nature in the crowning glory of human life, in reviving one's dormant, inherent spiritual nature as a servant of the Lord, and continuing that eternal service ever after in the spiritual world. So, Srila Prabhupada very much wanted to establish Varnashram Dharma, because that is Krishna's own arrangement for managing society according to his own plan. This material creation is perfect and complete because it emanates from Krishna, who is perfect and complete. And as the Lord states in Sri Ishopanishad, since the absolute whole is perfect and complete, all the emanations from him are also perfect and complete, as themselves, as perfectly equipped wholes in and of themselves. The problem is forgetfulness of the purpose for which this phenomenal world was designed. It's no mystery to understand the purpose of the world. Srila Prabhupada explained that the Vedic scriptures are like a owner's manual or operator's manual, which you get with any commodity you buy. You buy some piece of technology like microphone. I wouldn't know what to do with it. But you get a manual with it. It tells you what it's for and how to use it. So what to speak of such a complex phenomena as this material world, which obviously has some inconceivably superior intelligence behind it. But what's the purpose? One whose vision is covered by material conditioning, he cannot see clearly. And he also cannot see the consequences of his own actions. And therefore, the Vedic scriptures give us guidance in how to act. And the Varnashram system is not only very scientific, but it's also very natural. A child is observed for his natural propensities. And some children, as in the case of child Krishna, was naturally inclined to take up a little stick and start herding the calves. It was natural. And it's also natural for anyone born and raised in a natural environment. Some of those children will naturally, I can speak in my own case, when I was a child, my parents could not stop me from herding cows. They were telling me that there's no need to do so. And Srila Prabhupada even said there was no need for Krishna to do so. Nanda Maharaj was a king. He was a cowherd, but he was a king of the cowherds. He had so much opulence, there was no need for Krishna to go make his livelihood. But it was natural. And the Varnashram system is divine. The system is that the elders, the parents, they'll observe the propensities of the child. And if the child is inclined to be a gopa, then he's just encouraged. And the unspoken or sometimes spoken message is that you have God-given gifts, God-given talents, God-given abilities. Simply utilize them in the service of the Lord and your life will be perfect and sublime. So too in the case of the Shudras and the Kshatriyas and the Brahmanas. Srila Prabhupada referred to the modern educational system as the slaughterhouse, because it destroys one's natural God-given abilities and gifts with another message, usually unspoken, but inferred and enforced, that you don't have any gifts, you don't have any abilities, you can't make it on your own, and you have to come to us, the educational system, for training. And you go through the whole educational system and then graduate from high school, then you're still more bewildered, so you have to go to college. And then if you want to be something really significant like a PhD, then you got to go more. And so, you know, your life is nearly half over by the time you get out of school. And then they've completely lost any awareness of their own God-given gifts and God-given abilities, because they've been so programmed by the educational institution, which has just reinforced the initial message that you're deficient to begin with. You come to us for the proper gifts, then go back into the system we created and become a specialist in some field without having any clue as to how the whole field is working. They're programmed to be like, you know, some little part of a computer not understanding the workings of the whole, thinking they're independent, but completely controlled by the whole system. But the worst thing that Srila Prabhupada objected to is the unspoken message to which they're conditioned in school. Because according to the principles of the modern educational systems, which are secular, the teachers are not allowed to explain to the children that there is a God. And they're also not supposed to say there is no God. Because, you know, the children are supposed to figure that out for themselves somehow. I don't know how. But what they're taught is these scientific theories, which seem to be very impressive. And actually seem, even to the teachers, to be beneficial for, you know, children to think about things in line of all this knowledge that's been gathered over the ages about the universe. But what even the teachers in most cases do not understand is that these scientific theories have been designed, insidiously fabricated by Rakshasas, of whom we have a beautiful example here in Hiranyakashipu. Rakshasas who hate God and are not going to, you know, proclaim or deny the existence of a creator, but will engineer theories that sound so convincing and don't give credence either to God, nor do they deny God. But the great violence inflicted by these systems is that they are specifically, intentionally designed to create doubt about the nature of God. Because the way these theories are presented is that children who go to school with an open mind, just eager to learn anything and everything, are taught these theories by which they are led to conclude that according to this theory, what's the use of God? If you think about these theories and examine the way they're presented and see how children respond to them, the natural conclusion a child will come to is that you can't figure out if there is or is not a God according to the theory, but what you're naturally led to contemplate is what is the use of God according to the world picture being presented in these theories. So that's the ultimate reason why Srila Prabhupada referred to these institutions as slaughterhouses. Not to say that we can't send our children to these institutions. It's definitely not ideal, but maybe the best use of a bad bargain. But if a child does have to undergo such conditioning, he should be reinforced by his parents or guardians or whoever about the deficiencies of these systems. So Prahlad is being sent back to the Asura Kula for, what's this, like the third time, to Chandanamarka, the sons of Shukracharya, the seminal priest of the demons. Interesting that Shukracharya, he's a Vedic priest. He's the priest of the demons. And his sons, who are teachers on behalf, Chandanamarka, are trying to teach Prahlad in the principles of diplomacy so that he could be a king like his father. But Prahlad was not interested in that kind of kingship. He wanted to be Rajarshi, a saintly king, which ruled the world in Vedic times. So Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita
cite a distinction between the path of Vedic ritual and the path of pure devotional service. The Vedic rituals are supposed to lead one to the perfection of complete dependence on Krishna. And therefore, Krishna gives instructions to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita that the Vedas deal primarily with the three modes of material nature. Which is good because it instructs how these three modes are working. But Krishna advises Arjuna at a certain point to rise above the three modes and be free from any concern of gain or safety. So, in the beginning, we must follow the Vedic rituals and rules, but not to think that they are our shelter, salvation, and redemption. They are guiding us and leading us to the conclusion which Srila Prabhupada is citing here: sarva dharma pratyaja mamekam sharanam vraja. Sharanam means refuge. Vraja as a verb means go. Go there. Take that refuge. Shukacharya elsewhere, Srimad Bhagavatam, in that big, complicated affair that he got into because of being a family priest in the story of King Yati and the conflict between the king's daughter and Shukacharya's own disciple, who got thrown in a well by the king's daughter, and they got in such a rift. And then Shukacharya got drawn into this whole political, and yeah, it was political because it involved the king's daughter. And all he had to try to resolve this conflict between his disciple and the king's daughter. And it was so complex and distracting and bewildering that he finally came to the conclusion it would just be better to go to the forest and fields and live off the grains that have just remained in the fields after the harvest. So he was lamenting that he was so implicated in the Vedic rituals and the consequences of being a family priest, that it would be better to live as a beggar, or even better than begging, which is authorized for sannyasis and brahmacharis, even higher, is the complete shelter, taking complete shelter of the Lord just by living by whatever comes one's way of its own accord. Of which Raghunath Das Goswami is the perfect example. The son of a landlord who was practically on par with the king, had all opulences, but in the final perfection of his life was just living by the refuse coming out of the drains from the temple. And even then, he was condemning himself for being a sense enjoyer. Or when the decomposed prasad from the temple would be thrown out into a compost pile where the cows would come and eat their portion. But when the prasad became so decomposed that even the cows wouldn't eat it, then Raghunath, who was destined to become like a king, who had opulences greater than Indra in his youth and a wife more beautiful than an angel, but saw that this is all bondage, and seeking the ultimate freedom and joy to the soul of being completely dependent on the Lord's mercy was just living by what even the cows wouldn't. He considered that was a worthy quota if he was not even taking from the cows. So he'd take that decomposed rice and wash it off. And then he had a prashadam prayer different from ours. He didn't chant like we do. But he chanted, when one's heart has been cleansed by perfect knowledge and one has come to understand Krishna, he's gained everything. Why should such a person act like a debauchee by endeavoring to maintain his material body? Not that we don't maintain the material body, because it's the Lord's energy. It's the Lord's property. It should be maintained for His service. But anything above and beyond the bare necessities for our own self-aggrandizement should be rejected. So attaining such a perfectional state of life, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who was so eager to hear about the pastimes of his eternal associate Raghunath Das, when he heard from Surub Damodar about his ever-increasing perfection of renunciation, went there to see him. And he told Raghunath, I hear that you're feasting in private and you're not inviting us. What kind of etiquette is this? And then Mahaprabhu, with his own lotus hands, he grabbed some of that rice, which Raghunath was trying to hide. And Mahaprabhu grabbed it, just like Krishna grabbing that chipped rice from Sudama and eating it and then trying to grab for more. Krishna was stopped by Rukmini. Mahaprabhu was stopped by Surub Damodar. My Lord, this is not your quota. And the Lord said, you know, in the temple of Lord Jagannath, he eats so many feasts a day, but nothing so nectarian as the remnants of Raghunath Das Goswami. Your Lord so loves the offerings of his devotees. But what is it he's relishing? Their love, of which a symptom is their renunciation and their complete dependence on the Lord in love. Sharanagati. Surrender is a crude term with connotations of battlefields when you're just like outnumbered or overpowered and you give up. But Sharanagati means surrender in love. It has six components. Humility, dedication of the self, assurance that Krishna will always protect us, and surrendering to that shelter, accepting all things favorable for devotional service, rejecting all things unfavorable. The youthful son of Nanda Maharaj hears the prayers of those who address him through his sixfold path of Sharanagati. So, prior to the time of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the Gaudiya Vaishnav Sampradaya was just a few babajis who were very pure in their own worship. But Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was not satisfied that the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu be limited to such a restricted following. So he had a vision by which Mahaprabhu's teachings would spread to the world. And that vision reached its fulfillment in Srila Prabhupada's coming to the West. And in 1972, when the movement was just in its infant years, His Holiness Mukunda Maharaj introduced to Srila Prabhupada one specialist in international banking and law who was working for the Rothschilds, whoever they are. But I know that they're controlling the world through international banking. And this specialist of the Rothschilds was completely bewildered at how this movement is spreading worldwide. When Srila Prabhupada came alone with just, you know, a few dollars and a few books and gathering hippies off the street and training them in exclusive devotion to Krishna, has in just a few short years established this international institution. Nobody was trained in business or speaking or organization or anything. We had a priceless example in Srila Prabhupada's utter dependence on Krishna. And he was like a touchstone. He's still like it. He'll always be like a touchstone. Better than a touchstone, because he can awaken that same sense in others. And that servant of the Rothschilds was just, he said, this completely defies all reason how this movement is expanding. And he's to this day bewildered at how this is going on. It is going on how, with no capital, no trained people. But Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita that from me comes knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. And Srila Prabhupada, he translates Buddha Yoga in that context as mystic intelligence. And Srila Prabhupada's books were meant to be the, what do you call it? What is it that they're trying to come up with in Iraq? Constitution. Srila Prabhupada's books are the constitution for the world, in which is the peace formula of complete dependence on Krishna. So yesterday we were discussing very briefly the episode of Vishwarup taking sannyas, but it's actually even richer to consider it in context. The Lord's elder brother, Sri Vishwarup, who appeared from the womb of Sachi after she lost her 8 children, Mother Sachi lost 8 daughters, just like Mother Devaki lost 6 sons. Those 6 sons being the Sadgarbhasuras, the 6 archetypical anarthas that one must let go before Shesh appears within the womb of our consciousness. A slightly different version with Mother Sachi, losing 8 daughters just at birth. Those daughters being these eightfold energies which cover the individual soul and the individual universes and keep us incarcerated in the material world. After she let go those 8 daughters, then Shesh, Sankarsha, appeared from her womb as Vishwarup. And he devoted all his time to study of the scripture. And at that time, his little brother Nimai, Sri Gauranga Mahaprabhu, was just fully enjoying the pleasures of childhood play. And it was only Vishwarup. Vishwarup was the only person in all the world at that time who could detect in the childhood play of his brother the pastimes of child Krishna. And as a child, little Nimai was very rambunctious. And he could not be controlled or intimidated by anyone, with one exception, his big brother, Vishwaroop. The very sight of him would make little Nimai most meek and humble. Vishwaroop knew that my little brother is none other than the son of Nanda Maharaj, come back in a golden form. But he did not tell anybody because he knew it was not yet time. So, when Jagannath Mishra, thinking that Vishwaroop was a little eccentric because he didn't engage in any kind of social activity or childhood play or anything like that, he was thinking like parents usually do, that their children will become more, you know, giving and balanced when they get married and enter into relationships in which you see that, you know, your own little world is not all in all, but become more and more generous and sharing. So he was thinking about his marriage, and Vishwaroop could see what Jagannath Mishra was meditating on, so he took sannyas. And that was total devastation to everyone in Navadvip. The house of Jagannath Mishra, in which the personification of eternity, knowledge, and bliss, little Nimai, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, was playing as a child, turned into the abode of mourning. And all the Vaishnavas who had taken shelter of Vishwaroop as the person who day and night was immersed in nothing but talks of Krishna, thoughts of Krishna, narrating pastimes of Krishna, personifying service to Krishna. He was gone. So the whole town and even the ordinary people were devastated by the loss of Vishwaroop from their sight. And Jagannath Mishra, they were afraid that he could not even maintain his life. He was so morose, but the people were encouraging him that actually his vast learning is crowned with glory. And he has earned the deliverance of crores of generations in your family by his meritorious act of forfeiting, of renouncing the world. But Jagannath Mishra could not be consoled. But everyone was encouraging him, let your sorrows be removed by the presence of your other son. And what use are crores of sons to one who has a child like him? But Jagannath Mishra, he was afraid that this other child would also take sannyas. So he made he gave an order to his son that from this day on, you're no longer allowed to study. You can just play as you like. You don't have to worry about a livelihood or anything. I will take care of you. And Mother Sachi said, well, how's that going to work? How's he going to get a wife if he's not learned? And Jagannath Mishra said, my dear, you should know better being the daughter of a pandit yourself. Where is it stated in the scripture that it is good learning by which one attains a good wife? It is Krishna's will who awards a good wife. I myself, Mishra said, learned scholar, my life has always been a history of poverty, whereas there's plenty of fools who have all kinds of riches and good wives by material standards. So Krishna is our only protector and maintainer, and a life that is free from want and a death with ease can only be attained by surrender to Krishna, not by any amount of learning. So he called in Nimai and said, from this day on, you are not allowed to study. Nimai at that time was, you know, pretty much infatuated with his studies, but in obedience to his father's will. So, okay. And just continued, but, you know, his unrestricted play revealed up to that point became intensified, that he began getting in all kinds of trouble day and night. At night, he would gather his friends together, and they'd tear off and cover themselves with blankets and go roaming through banana orchards like bulls, knocking down all the trees. And then they'd tie people in their houses so they couldn't get out to answer the call of nature. And when they'd hear the people crying, "Help, help, who tied us in our house?" they would just laugh. And so much mischief. And you know, he would steal all the butter and milk from someone's house, and they would go complain to Mother Sachi, and she'd say, "Oh, tie him up." "No, don't tie him up." Because they were delighted to have him come and steal all the butter and yogurt from their houses, just like the Brijabasis in Vrindavan 4,500 years prior. And then, one day when Jagannath Mishra was away from home, little Nimai went and sat on top of this pile of broken cooking pots and smeared himself with the soot. So he was all black. But yet he was effulgent from within and looked like an effulgent opal jewel. And when Mother Sati's friend said, your child is, you know, sitting on that contaminated place," and she ran out, she said, "Get down from that place and take your bath. Can't you see you're contaminated?" And he said to Mother Sachi, "This little infant child, don't you know, Mother Sachi, that wherever I reside, there, that place is full of all holiness. All the Tirthas, the Ganga herself, reside within me. And ponder this well, my dear mother. Can there be any sin on the part of the Creator? And you should know that things that are classified as pure or impure according to the theories of men or the Vedas can be purified by my touch." He spoke in the mood of Dattatreya from his little throne of broken cooking pots, and Mother Sachi saw she couldn't reason with him, so she ascended that pile of pots and brought him down and bathed him. But what he was giving his commentary on is the smarta conception, which likes to use the scriptures, the Vedas, in the service of one's own false ego, trying to improve the material world by following the Vedic injunctions, craving temporary material life and pretending to agree with following the scriptures just to increase our own material position and enjoyment. Catering to one's own false ego in the name of scriptural injunctions. And the Lord was protesting that and showing the quality of devotees which follow the scriptures according to their attachment to the Lord. So, shortly thereafter, one very pure-hearted Brahmin came to the house of Mother Sachi and gave the Lord some betel nut, Mahaprasad, which he honored, and then he fainted. No, before he fainted, he told Mother Sachi, "I'm going home now. Treat this Brahmin as your son. Serve him with affection just like your own son, because I'm going home." And his eyes rolled back and he fell on the floor, and there was no life symptoms left in his body. And Mother Sachi, she'd been through this a few times, so she poured Ganges water into his mouth and he came back to life. So Lochan Das Thakur, who actually wrote this pastime, as he heard it in a conversation, Murari Gupta speaking to Damodar Pandit, Lochan Das Thakur said, "This pastime needs an explanation." So he said that Damodar Pandit asked Murari Gupta, what did he mean when he said, "I'm going home now? This requires an explanation." And Murari Gupta said, "Yes, but who can give it? Do you think I understand all the intricacies and mysteries of the Lord's Leela? I don't know what he meant." But I'll explain it as best as I understand. If it seems reasonable to you, you can accept it with faith. As far as I can tell from this Leela, the Lord is revealing how he enters into the heart of a devotee who has fondness for hearing his pastimes, following his instructions, meditating upon him, and serving him. The body of such a devotee becomes the home of the Lord, who enters into that devotee's heart. And from within the heart of that devotee, he performs his leela. And therefore the Lord, he tells Uddhava that he considers worship of his devotees and service to devotees superior to worship and service to him, his own self. And the Lord loves being subservient to his devotees. Soon thereafter, Lord Chandas Thakur said, "There is one pastime, hearing which will mitigate all your miseries." Which is ironic because it's such a heart-rending pastime. Murari Gupta explained to Damodar Pandit how one day when Jagannath... Actually, this requires a little introduction. After the incident on the refuse pile, all the neighbors came to Jagannath Mishra and said, what is going on here? We have so much trouble getting our children to study. Your child wants to do nothing but study, and you won't let him. And then they used his own logic that, you know, you're afraid he's going to... By studying the scriptures, he's going to understand the temporary nature of this world and take sannyas like Vishwarup. But as you preach to Mother Sachi, Krishna's the controller. Everything's in his hands. And Jagannath Mishra was defeated. So he allowed his child to again take up his studies. But seeing how little Nimai was just so immersed in studying the scriptures, Jagannath Mishra thought, it's inevitable. When one studies the scriptures with such scrutiny, he understands this material world is temporary. All our material endeavors have temporary results. And the real purpose and goal is only to surrender to Krishna. Sarva Dharma Pratyaja, Vamekam Sharanagraja. So Jagannath Mishra became very morose, thinking that this child will also leave me. And then there's no life left. So thinking like that, and then one night he had this dream. Mother Sachi awoke to her husband just crying out in great anguish, "Oh Lord Govinda, don't take away my Nimai. You've already taken all my daughters and my Vishwarup. Don't take away my Nimai. Let him stay home, please, Lord." Mother Sachi woke up. "What is going on?" He said, "I just had a dream where little Nimai was sitting on a throne, and Advaitacharya and Gadadhar Pandit and Srivas Thakur and all the devotees were worshipping my little Nimai." And then four-headed, five-headed, thousand-headed personalities, Brahma, Shiva, Anantashesh, came and joined those devotees and worshipping our little Nimai on his high throne. And little Nimai, he raised his little lotus feet and placed them on the heads of all these great souls and blessed them that you all chant Hare Krishna. And then our little Nimai rose from the throne and in the garb of a sannyasi led all those devotees on big Harinam Sankirtan. And then he left Navadvip, proceeding on pilgrimage to Jagannath Puri, leading crores of devotees all chanting holy names of Krishna. And this dream has affirmed my deepest fear that Nimai too, like his brother Vishwaroop, will leave us. And then we will have no one in whom to take shelter. And Mother Sachi, this was like a reversal of the normal trend. It was such a horrendous thought to her, she couldn't even consider it. And she began preaching to her husband, Jagannath Mishra, it's just a dream. Don't take it so seriously. Little Nimai, he's too attached to studies. Why would he leave? She couldn't even consider it. She wasn't disturbed in the least because she couldn't even consider such a possibility. But it really affected Jagannath Mishra. Shortly thereafter, he came home from his guru's ashram and broke into a very high fever. So serious, it appeared that he was about to leave the world. And Mother Sachi was frantic, and the neighbors and friends and relatives were all coming, and they were all frantic. And little Nimai became very grave. He told Mother Sachi, you know, everyone in this world ultimately has to die. Brahma, Shiva, the mighty Himalayas, the vast oceans, one day they all have to die. The important thing is that at that crucial time we gather together our friends and family and chant the holy names. At that critical hour, it is the duty of loved ones to help that soul on his journey back to Godhead. So don't delay. And then little Nimai led all the friends and relatives in Krishna Kirtan. And then he made a procession carrying Jagannath Mishra to the bank of the Ganges. And little Nimai, clutching the lotus feet of his father, began crying, Father, is such a cherished word. But how will I use it if you are to leave me? The house is empty. All the directions are dark. Who is going to hold my hand and teach me now that you're leaving? Jagannath Mishra spoke his last words. I had a great desire, which is not to be fulfilled, and therefore I surrender you, my child, to the lotus feet of Raghunath, the family household, Shalagram Shila. So then on the bank of the Ganges, placing tulsi leaves in his mouth and Ganges water upon his head, Mother Sachi was pleading with her husband, please take me with you. I've served you faithfully when you were awake, when you were sleeping. Don't leave me behind. And then a celestial chariot came and took Jagannath Mishra back to Goloka. And Mother Sachi was crying frantically. And little Nimai, the tears falling from his lotus eyes, falling upon his chest, looked like a garland of pearls. And then when he was crying so bitterly, feeling separation from his father, and Mother Sachi was crying frantically in separation from her husband, their friends, the friends of Mother Sachi were approaching her, and little Nimai's friends were approaching. Nimai, don't keep crying like this. The whole world is already wailing in response to your sorrow. If you continue, the whole world will die. And the housewives were pacifying Mother Sachi. Just look into the face of your child. You have him in whom to take shelter, so check your emotions. And then when they told little Nimai that if you continue to cry like this, the whole world will be plunged into unprecedented sorrow, he checked himself and performed the funeral rites for his departed father. So, what we see in the pastimes of the Lord is his deep love for his devotees. What we see in this chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam is that little Prahlad, so helpless, but due to his complete taking shelter of the Lord, is fearless and even happy in all the circumstances his father placed him to try to kill him. Srila Prabhupada was named Abhaya Charan, one who was fearless, having taken shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord. And when Srila Prabhupada came into this Western world, the very empire of Maya, with only a few dollars and only a few books, but with his complete faith in the holy name of Krishna, he changed the course of history of the world. It wasn't just his utter dependence on the will of Krishna, but he was also able to instill in others that utter dependence on the mercy of the Lord. And it is that utter dependence on Krishna which has been the success of this movement. And it is that sense of our utter dependence on Krishna which will determine the future of this movement and the future of the world. So Srila Prabhupada so much loved these chapters on Prahlad Maharaj. He was lecturing on these chapters when he was here in New Vrindavan in, what was it, 74 or 70, and you could see he had such a special taste for these chapters. And he wrote that little booklet, Teachings of Prahlad. He saw that this is just what the world needs to hear and understand. The teachings of Prahlad, this little child, because of his complete and utter dependence on Krishna. In this Western world, the government has gone mad making all kinds of military arrangements for protection, and it has just made the world a more dangerous place. And they're struggling to come up with some kind of constitution in Iraq that will end all the terrorism and violence, which is just escalating. The real constitution is here in Srimad Bhagavatam and Srila Prabhupada's books, which are meant to guide the world, especially for the next 10,000 years, the golden age predicted, when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings will be accepted by the world as the ultimate constitution. So Srila Prabhupada's books are arranged at a table in the back, and we request everyone take shelter of Srila Prabhupada's books. Give shelter to others in the form of Srila Prabhupada's books. And in those books is the instructions by which we can perfect our lives. We can fulfill our dharma according to Varnashram in this life and perfect it by Sarva Dharma Pratita, finally surrendering to the dharma of the soul, which is to take complete shelter in Krishna and act lovingly according to his will. And then this material existence will reap its final reward in awarding us free passage back home, back to Godhead. Thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments? All glories to Srila Prabhupada.